Of course, passion isn't always about romance. Sometimes it's about ideas and intellectual sparks and the friends to strike them with.
November 25th, 1960. I was distressed you wouldn't come and have been worrying about what could be the matter. I started to call you up and try to persuade you to change your mind, and then I decided I'd better mind my own business and didn't do it. Now I'm sorry I didn't, because I think too many people, and especially me, mind their own business when their real business is somebody else's business. I feel very strongly that your business is my business, even if I don't always act quick enough on the feeling.
That letter is from the writer Flannery O'Connor to a woman almost no one has ever heard of. Elizabeth Betty Hester was a 31-year-old credit bureau clerk living with her aunt in Decatur, Georgia, when she first wrote to the famed Southern writer. And Flannery O'Connor wrote back and kept writing for 9 years until her death in 1964. The women exchanged over 300 letters, and when Betty Hester's letters were published in an O'Connor volume many years later, she was identified only as A for anonymous.
July 20th, 1955. I'm very pleased to have your letter. Perhaps it is even more startling to me to find someone who recognizes my work for what I try to make it than it is for you to find a God-conscious writer near at hand. The distance is 87 miles, but I feel the spiritual distance is shorter. You were very kind to write to me, and the measure of my appreciation must be to ask you to write to me again. I would like to know who this is who understands my stories.
Flannery O'Connor wasn't Betty Hester's only famous correspondent. In the mid-60s, she began writing to the celebrated British novelist Dame Iris Murdoch and began a correspondence that would last more than 30 years. Although Betty Hester had attended college, her life was one of such shelter and routine, she might well have belonged to another time and place. But she had a vital mind. Last December, the day after Christmas, a friend of Betty's stopped by her home near Atlanta. William Sessions, a professor of English at Georgia State University, was surprised when Betty handed him a pile of manuscripts and asked him to keep them. That afternoon, Betty Hester committed suicide. And now, William Sessions has spent the past several weeks going through her manuscripts and far-flung correspondence jammed in with books throughout her Decatur home.
Working through Betty's house was not unlike going through Emily Dickinson's house when her niece found the poems. Nothing like of that magnitude or grandeur exists, but on the other hand, it was finding a life that was lived passionately and fully and on its own terms, absolutely filled with a kind of energy and a kind of passion, especially about thinking. The library that she gave me, all of her books, were 3,000, are filled with books from Wittgenstein, Husserl, Levinas, Einstein, as well as works on mathematics, as well as, of course, numbers of writers. And all this was on her own as she went back and forth every day on the bus to work in the credit bureau.
A passionate private intellectual, what led her to write Flannery O'Connor in the first place?
She was fascinated by O'Connor's stories, and she herself was writing. And she, of course, had no community of writers particularly. So in the good old 19th century fashion, she just wrote letters.
Now, of course, O'Connor drew heavily from her Catholicism in her works, even mystical Catholicism. She wrote her Gothic Southern stories featuring outsiders, strange preachers, convicts, people we'd see in the novels, Wise Blood, A Good Man is Hard to Find. And it's interesting the way that she would communicate these themes of Catholicism to her correspondent, Betty Hester.
August 2nd, 1955. I am not a mystic, and I do not lead a holy life. Not that I can claim any interesting or pleasurable sins. My sense of the devil is strong. But I know all about the garden variety, pride, gluttony, envy, and sloth. And what is more to the point, my virtues are as timid as my vices. I think sin occasionally brings one closer to God, but not habitual sin, and not this petty kind that blocks every small good. A working knowledge of the devil can be very well had from resisting him.
William Sessions, was Betty Hester religious?
She was religious in her own search for the absolute. She was for a time interested in Catholicism, then she became a Catholic, and then she stayed a Catholic for about 4 years, and then she left. She had worked out, in fact, her own sense of a kind of philosophy and a kind of concept that would help you survive. In Betty's case, as a woman living in the South, in a very difficult time, and you have to remember that she was coming of age in the very time Margaret Mitchell was writing Scarlet O'Hara, in the same place, that is, literally within blocks of each other. And Betty had a great need for a woman to write to, a woman, in a sense, to be a companion with. And I think that's the point here, is that it was a very deep intellectual friendship. Flannery was herself comparatively isolated in Milledgeville in Middle Georgia. And then Betty became interested in the church, and this helped to Flannery to define her own conceptions and ideas about religion, about life, and of course about the art of writing.
It's understandable that she'd be attracted to a writer who lived only 87 miles away and was a fellow Southerner. But what was behind Betty Hester's approach to Iris Murdoch, who was living on the other side of the Atlantic? Murdoch was a very celebrated intellectual and woman of letters. She had been heavily influenced by Satrap. She was a graduate of Oxford, married another Oxford graduate in England, and very well established by the time Betty Hester caught up with her.
What is more remarkable to me is not what drew Betty Hester to Iris Murdoch, but what kept Iris Murdoch writing to her from the first correspondence I've found, which is 1964, a letter from Rome, a card from Rome, until 1996, actually.
Murdoch, we should remind our listeners, is severely ailing now with Alzheimer's disease. She's 79 years old and being cared for by her husband, John Bailey.
Yeah. In 1997, John Bailey wrote to Betty and said that Iris Murdoch had Alzheimer's. But he said, please keep writing to her. She loves, underlined, your letters. And then he also thanked Betty for her analysis of his trilogy of novels, which he wrote again. I find extremely underlined interesting. And I think that was it. What was the attraction was Betty's ability to analyze, to penetrate, to get to the deeper meanings of these various writers. And at the same time, both Flannery and I think Iris Murdoch recognized her vulnerability and her moments of great depression and her manic moments in any sense.
It is still remarkable and hard to answer how her mind could have matched those she wrote.
I think it's a great miracle, and it's a great tribute to the fact that human beings can lead ordinary lives, take buses to their work and come back again, work in credit bureau offices, and then go home and read and think and have very deep existence.
Betty Hester is almost the kind of character one finds in a novel of Tolstoy's, you know, one of these little bureaucrats or
that's
who
right,
has an incredible
yes, exactly,
life or a go-go
exactly,
character.
Yeah.
Two other people could be talking about a play they'd just seen.
That's right, yeah.
These two were talking about heavy metaphysical ideas.
That's right, and the self. And that's why I think Betty sought out strong, powerful women to talk to, because it helped her to know who she was and helped her to learn how to survive. And she did.
Your last letter from Betty Hester refers to her influence on these two women, or whether or not it was profound. You were going to a conference in San Diego to talk about A, meaning Betty Hester, A for anonymous, and she wrote to you. Could you just share a bit of that with us?
Dear Bill, forgive me that I didn't get this to you sooner. About Wessling's essay, I'm flattered that she gives me so much credit, of a sort that is. But it's my personal conviction that as individuals or absolutes, nobody ever meaningful makes any difference to the identity of another. Let me put it this way. We're all, each that is, virgins forever. That, I think, is the true meaning of immortality. Either we are or we aren't. But while we are, we're changeless. Happy landings in San Diego, Betty.
She was such a graceful writer herself.
She really was. She had a command of the sentence that was really profound.
You very much want to keep her memory alive, don't you?
I absolutely do, because I think she was a remarkable person. And I deeply admire people in our consumer world who will search for the absolute. It's just as simple.
William Sessions is professor of English at Georgia State University. Elizabeth Betty Hester died December 26th at the age of 75. Some of her correspondence with Flannery O'Connor can be found in the book The Habit of Being by Sally Fitzgerald.